Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
Bump, stickity bump, stickity bump. I feel like you have to do that when that track drops, but whatever. It's the Spiegel and Holmes show. Matt Spiegel, Lawrence Holmes here with you until 6 o'clock. Dave Wannstedt will be in studio. Tony Wise will be here too. Is that right? Do we have that confirmed?
Yeah, Tony Wise is coming along with Wani, which is amazing. So we can talk offensive line with one of the gods of the offensive line coach community.
All right, I like that.
Tell him I said hello.
We will, Tony.
We will absolutely do that. There was a really cool moment over at the United Center last night. There's a bunch of stuff going on with United Center tenants. There's stuff going on with the White Sox. There's stuff going on with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
And there's only one man who can cover all of it, Lawrence.
It's true. Our guy, Joe Cowley, who covers the Bulls for the Sun-Times, had a little extra nugget in there, too, about the White Sox when it came to his game coverage last night. We are happy to have Joe Cowley on the Score with us right now. What's up, sir?
What's up, boys? Look at this duo. You've all grown up. Look at you two.
Right? I mean, like, you've known us both a long-ass time,
Joe.
Oh,
my gosh. Long time. Yeah. Long time.
They put us together. You don't put guys like that in a room together. Who knows what can happen?
Who knows if there could be fun and, like, interesting conversations and whatnot. It's turned out well. And great guests like Joe. So before we get to the White Sox stuff, because I do want to ask you some questions about that, what was it like last night to witness what is medically one of the greatest comebacks in NBA history?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's cool. It was a cool moment. You know, I mean, obviously it would have been nice if it was a regular season game and the crowd would have been a little more raucous. But, you know, it's great for him. I mean, you know, he's not the type that opens the door on his life. You know, we don't know him like we did DeMar. We know Zach because Zach's been around so long. And I don't know if that's because he's kind of lived in the shadow of his dad, and his dad has always kind of been the loud voice in the spotlight. And maybe that's been done on purpose. But what you know of this kid, and in talking to this kid, he's pretty quiet, he's pretty reserved, but he's a good dude, and they all like him. And, you know, I mean, there's so many times where you just rolled your eyes back and said, you know, you'd get an update, you just roll your eyes back and go, he's done. So for him to be the only one that's really believing in this thing that he will play again when the rest of us are rolling his eyes, for him to be able to get out there and not only play but flash, I think says a lot about him and says a lot about the journey and what he's gone on, because those are some rough seas for a lot of years. So I don't know how it's going to end. I don't know if it's going to end well. But it was really cool last night. That I do know.
Yeah, you know, we're trying to kind of bask in the moment of it and give it love for a kid who said he was full of joy to even be preparing to do it. And then, like you say, to flash, making some shots, showing some help defense skills. And that one moment in the corner, Joe, where he kind of threw, you know, with some abandon, he went to make a save, because it didn't look like an NBAer going full speed. The question is if that's even possible, and a full speed or full jumping ability is good enough. Frankly, we don't know that yet.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, I didn't mean to be a realist today in my piece that I just wrote for the Sun-Times and sent in, but, you know, he checked out okay. It was a light practice today, so no one really went hard. His mindset is still that he wants to play tomorrow, and they have to take this kind of one game at a time. But, you know, what if they can get him up to 22, 24 minutes a game? He's not going to do back-to-backs, and that's fine. But come February, if he's still up and running and he's flashing and he's doing what they feel like he can do and what he feels like he can do, all of a sudden he becomes a valuable trade piece with an expiring contract. And that's kind of, you know, the mindset of the reality that the Bulls have to, you know, start thinking about. You know, the hugs and the congratulations are over with now, but now it's time to get ready for basketball. And can he be a big piece in this thing for them to go ahead and move him? And, you know, I think if he's the guy I saw yesterday, and I obviously think his condition is going to get better. I think his athleticism will get slightly better looking as he trusts the knee. He's not a great athlete before the knee injury, but if he can stay healthy and continue on this path, you're telling me he doesn't help a playoff contender coming off the bench? I mean, I see an asset there. I see them trying to get an asset, whether it's draft pick or whatever it is. So, just something to kind of monitor as far as what the long play in this is.
Joe Cowley, who covers the Bulls for the Sun-Times, is joining us here on Spiegel and Holmes. Do you still have your BBWA card?
I have the honorary gold card, so I could show up at a ballpark and go up to the press box and taunt Scott Merkin and guys like that if I want.
Okay, so for those who don't know, before Joe covered basketball, he covered baseball for a long time, and he was a
12 years.
Thorn in the side of a lot of people on both sides of town, but particularly on 35th and Shield.
Joe spit truths about Kenny Williams and White Sox brass when they didn't want them spit.
100%.
It got so, put it this way, after they sent me down to Miami after Ozzie got traded, I was at the airport flying back, and DeLuca, my sports editor, who's awesome because he was a baseball beat writer and a national baseball guy and gets it, he calls me up and he's like, "That's it, you're done." I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, "Dude, there is nothing left for you at that. Every bridge is burnt. There is nothing left. You are done with the White Sox." I'm like, "What?" And so that was it. They sent me down to Miami knowing that there was nothing left for me to cover with this team because, I had some players still, but as far as front office, Don Cooper and, ownership, it was all burnt. It was gone. So
what's – and I think that's actually really well done by DeLuca to understand that.
That's really good self-awareness.
That's good management, honestly. Yeah. So what did you think and what have you heard when the story came out in The Athletic yesterday that Jerry Reinsdorf might be interested in selling the White Sox?
Yeah, the sky is blue and could be blue in a couple of years because, I mean, this has been talked about for a while that the Bulls are something he wants to keep in the family. And the White Sox are a piece that's going to be turned over because the baseball will never come up with that salary cap. And so in his mind, it is a losing business. And that's been talked about by people around him, closely around him for a couple of years now. So it's just a matter of when he's going to do it. And the way the story was worded, some group called up Jerry and said, we heard you guys are worth $2 billion. We'll give you $4 billion. You want to sell right now? Heck yeah, he'd sell right now. But I don't think he's actively looking to sell the White Sox. I think he's starting to try to put pieces in place and maybe using it as leverage if he could do something with the stadium. But the people that I know that are close around him, he's still – I definitely think it's just a – once again, I'm not going to do what people think I should do or when I should do it. But at the same time, I definitely think there's something, and I think we've all thought that this is not a team he wants to keep in the family. The Bulls are.
Mm-hmm. He's the only one in the family who loves them and cares about them.
It's funny because the other people in the family have tried to talk him, and this is going years back, out of some of the personnel he's held on to, knowing it was bad for the organization. And they are told, no, no, no. I mean, this is his baby, and it's always been his baby, and he's stubborn to a fault. So, I just don't think, if someone came with some crazy offer, yes. But I think that's been on the table for a couple of years now.
You get a call early on the day if we ever end up doing the obituary show, because he's a complicated guy, Joe, and it's like, and a complicated owner and a complicated legacy. It's not all negative. People go to negative town, but there's a lot of positive. Tell people some,
Well, when I was at the Daily South Town when I first got to Chicago, and I remember they were still in Tucson, and I was probably a couple years on the beat, and he just really liked me. He liked the way I covered the team and approached the team, and I remember one time, Scott Reifert didn't have his VP title and was still a semi-human being to talk to. And so he's like, "Hey, Jerry wants to see you up in the suite up at, the old Tucson ballpark." So I go up there, and it was like when Roy Hobbs went to go see the owner, and it was like dark. I remember that. I was like, "Why is this room so dark?" And he's like, yeah, I just want to let you know, about Frank Thomas's diminishing skills contract. And he gave me a story. And so, you know, I wrote it, and then Frank got pissed. And that's when Frank told me off the, you know, on the record that he's disappointed the first and 15th of every month, which is still one of the greatest quotes ever that I got. And so Jerry and I had a really good relationship. And my whole point coming from Cleveland was, if Cleveland had an owner like Jerry Reinsdorf, and we're talking about, you know, Cleveland's a city, you know, where I was born and raised, where Art Modell betrayed, the ultimate betrayal of what he did. A guy like Jerry Reinsdorf would have statues and street names all over the place. And that was always my argument with Chicago fans, is you guys don't realize what you have. You don't realize what you have. Well, the longer I was on the beat and the more I started breaking behind the scenes stuff, the relationship went really bad, and to a point where we had to meet in a press box with a little more light in it in Washington. I remember the White Sox were playing the Nationals in Interleague. I get called in there, and it's two chairs facing each other, and Reifert tries sitting down, and I said, I thought this was just he and I talking man to man. And Reifert's like, well, I have to be in here. And that's when I start calling him a cabana boy, but he wouldn't leave, and that's fine. And Jerry and I, it was just going at it. He starts yelling at me, I don't have to tell you a damn thing. I don't owe you anything. But then he was like, but if you have something, you should call me and run it by me. And I'm like, you just said you don't have to tell me. And so after that, the relationship was never the same. And so, there are things I really liked about him and still like about him, but it became a very difficult relationship, and that's fine. I mean, it wore its way out. And it was a very complicated relationship with he and I.
Who would you like to see start Sunday for Pittsburgh?
I would like to see what Russ can do, because I think the last two games offensively have been stagnant in the first half. And so I would like to see what Russ can do, because they're not married to either of them. And, you know, I want to see if it was Sean Payton that kind of spoiled that milk, or does Russ have something? And because, I mean, to be honest, I think Fields is playing his best football. Doesn't mean it's up to par.
He's playing very responsible football right now.
Very big boy football. And it reminds me of Roethlisberger his first couple of years, where he was game managing and let the defense do a lot of things for him. And then obviously as he developed. So it was very much like that. And to me, that there's nothing wrong with that when you have a young guy. The difference is Fields is 4 years in now, 5 years, 4 years in. So you'd like to see a bigger jump than that. But
so, Russ, no, that makes all the sense in the world. Joe, I got to jump in. How has it been for you to navigate from being a notorious Justin Fields hater and denigrator in the public space to then having to root for him and tell people that he's good? Like, how awkward has that been for you? Because it's been fun to watch.
It's not awkward at all, because I've had to pull out that tweet from January of 23 where I said, Justin Fields needs to go to the Bears and demand a trade so he can get out of there and get back to being the quarterback he was at Ohio State. That was always my argument. The culture ruined him. They ruined him from the guy I saw at Ohio State. Ruined him. First thing that Artie Smith did with him when he got him into Pittsburgh is said, what was your footwork at Ohio State? All right, let's go back to that. You feel comfortable doing that? Let's go back and do that.
All right, second question. How awkward has it been for you to watch Caleb Williams to be this obviously good and elevated above everything and know that it's better than anything you have or will have?
Well, first of all, again, you have to go back to the tweets and go back to the Dan Bernstein show when I told Bernstein this guy is unruinable. And Bernstein even said, well, the Bears could ruin him. I think Caleb is fantastic. I mean, when you guys hit a home run by getting the second best quarterback out of that draft class, so you should be proud of that. The problem is, I think it's still the same ownership group. I still think it's still the same loser coach with a beard now, and you have an offensive coordinator. When a rookie wide receiver from Seattle was asked, can you talk about him?
Yeah.
He was like,
Yeah, you lost me. You lost me at go back to the Dan Bernstein show. You lost me there. I'm sorry.
Hey, Caleb Williams is a phenomenal talent. And I hope, I know you guys aren't used to watching high quarterback play. So, like, when you get it, it's like going from an Atari to, like, the PlayStation 5 I've been playing with for years. So it's you're excited. You're like, yeah, my PlayStation 5 is better than yours. And I'm trying to tell you, but I've had mine for years, and I know exactly how it works. But you're like, but look, I don't have Space Invaders or Pong anymore. So I know it, the city's excited, and they don't know what to do with themselves. But I'm just telling you, you've played 1 in 4 teams. Winter is coming. Winter is coming. Just trust me on that. And I'll just sit back and enjoy the show. That's all. That's what I do. I send some tweets out. I try to stay positive. I don't know if people follow me. I'm usually very positive, but sometimes I have to be realistic.
Well, I for one, appreciate your candor, and you're one of the people that the guardrails of sports in this city. I think that you are that, sir. So we appreciate you sharing all of your thoughts, and this is unbelievable segment as for you.
It really was.
Be well, and we will see you soon.
Anytime. I love the mashup between you two, by the way. It's like two great comic books that I used to collect are now a team up. It's great.
Thank you, Joe.
See, that's why I love Joe.
Thanks,
Roll
buddy.
Tide, too.
We'll talk to you. It's Joe Calley. That's a unique individual.
He's one of my favorite people.
There's an anniversary today that I'm excited about. And I have a T-shirt to celebrate it that I will unveil if you're watching on Twitch. It's underneath this zippy hoodie.
Oh, okay. So twitch.tv/Chicago670thescore.
Damn right.
Stick around. We'll celebrate an anniversary
yes,
next
we will.
On the score.
And Wani at the top of the hour.